A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to a special run of guest-hosted episodes of I Was There Too, the show where normally I talk to people who were there in the great and interesting moments of film history. But for the next 2 months, I'm stepping aside to let a handful of special people take over the hosting duties, because I'm off getting married and honeymooned. So I'll be back directly. But until then, this run of shows, both in the guests as well as the hosts, will be some really really great stuff. How do I know? Because I know who the guests are, and I know who the hosts are, and I will be listening to the interviews as they come just like you, and I can't wait. So today, I give you my good friend Steve Agee as host, talking to the great actor David Desmalchian about his time on Ant-Man and the wonderful Denis Villeneuve film Prisoners. Please stay subscribed, write a review of this show on iTunes if you can, and if you ever want to dig back into the archives to hear great episodes like Paul F. Tompkins discussing There Will Be Blood, Paul Scheer talking about being cut from Meet Dave, or Paul Rust on his time as one of the Inglourious Bastards, or any show with a Paul, just visit Stitcher Premium or Howl.fm. Thank you for listening. Aloha. And let's do this.
The films, Ant-Man and Prisoners, the years, 2015 and 2013, the roles, Kurt and Bob Taylor, the actor, David Desmalchian.
Hello, welcome to I Was There Too. I am not Matt Gourley, who usually hosts this show, which features interviews with actors who are in some of the memorable scenes in some of the larger movies you've ever seen. I am Steve Agee, guest hosting for Matt Gourley, who is planning a wedding. He's planning his wedding. He didn't take a second job as a wedding planner. My guest this week, this episode, is my good friend David Desmalchian. Don't talk yet, David. Who you know from multiple movies, including The Dark Knight, Prisoners, Ant-Man, a few of these, which we will touch on today. So let's get started. David, how are you?
Hi.
This is not our first time podcasting together.
No, it's our second time.
For those who are not in the know, I have a podcast called Steve Agee. David has graced it. You were one of my favorite guests I've ever had on the podcast because you were an amazing storyteller.
Well, thank you. And it was cool for me because it was like we were just starting to get to really know each other. We'd become good friends in the recent year. But like I got to know you that day too.
Well, we met through director James Gunn.
Great.
You and I were both supposed to be in the upcoming movie. Actually, by the time this comes out, it will be the now playing movie, The Belko Experiment, which James wrote and produced. And I was supposed to go do that movie. I had to bail like 2 days before I was going down to Bogota, Colombia. And then as I was seeing who was cast in the movie, I was really bummed out that I was not part of it. You were not at the table read that I was at. You were probably shooting something.
I don't know. You were, yeah, you went through the cast list. You're like, oh, cool, cool, cool. David,
Dastamal.
But I got back from Bogota and James had even
had an
eye over. We brought our little boy and yeah. we sat around the back porch eating pizza and hanging out all night.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Awesome. That was so fun.
James told me, I mean, I guess we can talk very briefly about the Belko experiment, which is, it's out now. I hope a lot of you have seen it. One of the most violent movies I've ever seen in my life.
By far. It's like X-violent.
But also like really funny. And I remember the table read, there were funny moments, but it still did not read as a comedy. And I don't remember it being as funny as it was in the script until I saw the actual movie like a week or two ago.
Yeah, I think that's how you get people through that experience. It's so visceral and bloody and violent, and like you're putting people in the worst case scenario over and over again. And then all of a sudden the audience, it was great to watch it with the full audience the other night because people were laughing.
God.
And then they were gasping. And
so
were,
much of the comedy. And I just remember going, I don't remember this being funny in the script. And I think a lot of the comedy comes through in just the performances.
Yeah, yeah. There's such a great cast. I went to see another film the other night, and the trailer for Belko played before it, and the guy sitting behind me as the trailer ended, the audience was like really responding to the trailer. It was exciting. I was like, this is so cool. And then the guy behind me afterwards like leans to his date and he's like, that's some sick mother made that movie.
Some sick mother. Some jive turkey.
And I
made
just
that
turned
movie.
Around. I want to be like, yeah, yeah.
Yep. It's so good. I'm so bummed not to be a part. Actually, I am in a very small part at the very end. I won't say anything, but at the very end of the movie. But I'm not even credited. It was so – and I think it was just them throwing me a bone saying, sorry, you couldn't be a part of it. But you and I are both part of the Marvel family now.
Yes. I cannot wait to see GOTG 2.
Guardians
Steven.
Of the Galaxy Volume 2 comes out May 5th.
Steven.
I play a Ravager in that. Maybe I'll be on this podcast as a guest to talk about my role in that.
Yeah.
But that's for a later date. We'll cover basically, I guess, in this Prisoners. And I really want to cover more Ant-Man, just seeing as how we're both part of the Marvel family. And I really like the movie. And but I did just watch Prisoners again like a few months ago, just randomly. And I'd kind of forgotten you were in it. Here's why I wanted to talk Prisoners. Well, when I first saw that movie in the theater, I didn't know you at all. And but James, I think it was James, was telling me a story when you first went down to Bogota, Colombia, to shoot Belko. They were having a dinner or something with a lot of the cast, and you walked into the room, and one of the actresses in the movie fucking
flipped
out and started like crying.
Yeah.
Because she recognized you from your part in Prisoners.
She was so scared. It was not even as nefarious as the darkness of night. It was breakfast. It was like coffee in the morning. I'm walking, you know, whistling my way down the sidewalk in Bogota. And
yeah.
James and Rooker and I think, I can't remember who else was there, maybe Tony Goldwyn. And this actress who... So I come to sit down. James like, David, come here. Let's have some coffee. Come sit down. Let's have breakfast. And I'm like, hey, guys, how's it going? It's good to see you. This girl just has tears in her eyes, and she like won't go near me. And James was like, we were all laughing. I mean, I was crying a little bit on the inside because it's
I'm
always like,
this
like I have that experience with children. I have that experience with – I just have the face that I was born with. And then in roles like what I did in Prisoners, apparently just left, which is a great, you know, compliment. It makes me happy to know that it's something stuck with her. But I was James was dying, man. She was she lost it.
That movie, you have a very – I mean, it's not a tiny part. It's a significant part. You're like the red herring in this movie.
I'm barely in the film, but I think that what's so wonderful about that role – I mean, I think I have like 6 lines total in the whole picture, but I get a couple of neat scenes where I'm in the background and then you just kind of get a glimpse of me and then I take off. But I don't know how you want to dive into the conversation, but I don't know what the listeners are most interested in, but I have really fun the whole story of how that came to be, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Really, well, how did it come about? Did you audition for this part?
Yes. So I had been in Los Angeles for about 2 years at that point, because it was 2012, around December. And I was sucking air. Like, I was, my checking account balance was looking like a nightmare.
Selling CDs at Amoeba.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. And then they didn't even want the CDs anymore. They're like, sir, people don't buy CDs anymore.
No.
And so I was selling blood. And I was really wanting to propose to Eve. And yeah. I was wanting, you know, to work. And all I could, at that time, all I was doing was putting together my film Animals, which was a labor of love. No money involved in that.
Great movie. Everyone should check it out.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So here it's almost Christmas, 2012. And out of the blue, on a Friday, I got this email with this offer, straight offer, to go do this film in another state. And it was a decent paycheck. Like, it was pretty good. It was a pretty good paycheck. And I was so excited. I was like, thank you, God. I've been praying for this. I needed this. Thank you. Thank you. The director called me directly. And like, we had this great conversation. They sent me the script. And I said, I'm sure I'm going to do it. You know, tonight, let's talk after I read it. And we can talk about the character. And I dove into the script, and I just, it wasn't for me. It wasn't the right thing. And I thought about it, and I said, well, this is my job. I'm supposed to just make roles work. I'm supposed to make things work. But at the same time, if I don't feel any connectivity whatsoever to the script, to the character, I felt horrible. It was a real like crisis of, you know, one of those crossroads moments.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at how much that would be, how much, you know, money.
Had you already said yes?
I hadn't said yes. I just said, oh, thank you. I'm really excited. Let me just read the script and then we'll talk tonight. Yeah. It was going to happen. They were like looking at traveling me in a day, like the next day.
Jesus. They're
gonna fly me for a month. So I really thought a lot about it, and I talked to a close friend of mine who's been in the business a long time. And I, at the end of the day, I realized that, you know what? If I took it and I was there and in my heart and my head, I was not into
checked
it.
Out, yeah.
This director was so passionate about his project, and I had so much respect for how much he cared about what he was doing there, that I knew I'd be doing him a disservice and I'd be doing everyone who watched it a disservice. So I made up a lie, and I called that night and I said, I'm so sorry, like a family emergency.
Wow.
And I can't.
Are you
do
allowed
it.
To say what movie that was?
I mean, I'm allowed to, but I don't think that's fair, because hopefully he won't listen to this and put two and two together.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if you're not feeling it, doesn't mean it's a bad movie.
It doesn't
it's
mean
just
it's
not
a
right
bad movie.
You.
And I exactly. And I think. And I think that I honestly don't think it ever came to the light of day.
Oh, okay.
To be quite honest. Okay. But I went home feeling okay about myself, and at that time Eve was bartending at the Hungry Cat in Hollywood, and I was an unemployed actor, and I like the weekend went by, and I just really second guessed myself. And Monday morning, I was like, I got to go run. I got to go do something. I'm trying to get in the skinny shape for Animals. And my agent called me and he said, hey, there's this last second audition across town at Bard & Schnee. And they're looking for this role in this film that sounds really cool. They can't find the guy they're looking for. Director really wants something specific. So I go to the office and I got the pages, and I immediately, it was the opposite reaction to what I had with the other thing. You know, I immediately was like, oh, this guy's, there's something really interesting going on here. And I felt like I knew how he dressed, how he walked, how he talked. So I went to the office across town, and
was this just an audition for
just
casting
an audition
director?
For casting director on tape? They said the director's already in Atlanta prepping the film. Blah blah blah.
And this is Denis Villeneuve.
Denis is for, you pronounce it Denis Villeneuve.
Villeneuve.
Yes, he is.
Boy, I've been saying it
French
wrong
Canadian.
For a long time.
I think like half of America probably has.
Was this his first American film?
It was his first.
He is American now film. Directed Arrival, Sicario, and the upcoming Blade Runner.
Yeah.
And he's nailing all of them too, by the way.
Dude. He had made a film prior to he made a number of films prior to Prisoners, but they were all in French.
Yeah.
And I had seen one of them. It was called Incendie, and it was up for Best Academy Award Foreign Picture in 2010, I believe. And it's one of the best films I've seen. So if you're out there, check it out. So anyway, I went in and I read with the guys, and I we did it like once, you know, we did the scene, and I left, and I said, I gave it all I got, you know, I only got one shot at it. But then I went, and even
was this something you were feeling too at the time? Were you like, I want to get this part. Or absolutely. Were you like, just another audition?
No. I absolutely felt – it was so interesting because on the page, the character was described as being scruffy and overweight and recluse, like a recluse. And I said, oh, no. In my mind, I felt like he was someone who blended into – I think I used the word like to Denis when I finally got to meet him. I said, he's like wallpaper. He's like a character that should just blend into anywhere else because that's how he's learned to adapt. That's how he's learned to hide in the world because he's still completely terrified that the people who took him as a kid are going to come back and get him any day.
Yeah.
So I went to New York with Eve for Christmas. Her family's house had been devastated by by Sandy. We were helping them work on the house and spending the holidays with her family. And I just a broke ass actor proposed to her no matter what. Because I said, if she loves me at this point, if this woman wants to be with me like this, then that's and of course you know Eve. And she could give a about that stuff. And we got engaged, came back to LA. First week of January, I'm like, okay, pilot season's coming. Maybe I get an audition for something good.
Pilot season.
And I'm driving over the hill, and my agent called, and he said, pack your bags, man. You're going to Atlanta. The director loved your tape, and he wants you. And I think I had to pull over the car. I was so excited. Because then at that point, I didn't know it was going to be –
Hugh Jackman,
Jake Gyllenhaal, Viola Davis, Terrence Howard, Paul Dano, Melissa Leo. I mean, the cast is insane.
It's an amazing cast.
And little David D, you know?
At the candlelight vigil,
David D just hiding in the background.
Oh, man, you are so fucking creepy in that movie. I understand why that girl at Belco was so freaked out by you are. And I, by the way, was like, yeah, this guy is guilty. You know, for those who don't know, you should rent the movie and maybe pause this because there'll probably be some spoilers. But I thought for sure you kidnapped those kids. What is so – he's such a fucked up character.
Yeah, he's great. He's such a great character. And when I got – as soon as I got to Atlanta, I went right into the fitting and the wardrobe looked how I felt it would look. And I talked to Denis and he said he's one of the best people as a human I've ever gotten to work with, but also as like an auteur. It's awesome. It's so awesome.
He's an amazing director.
You and all of my friends who I love who are actors get a chance to work with the guy at some point because he's just a dream on set. And we were sending each other. It was a dark experience for me because even though I have these little moments in the film, I have one quick confrontation scene with Jake at the door of my home. I have a scene at the vigil, and then I have it's like a 20-second scene, but it's at the police station.
Yeah,
where,
that's
spoiler
a brutal
alert,
scene. Yeah,
things go south fast. So I
spoiler alert: you kill yourself. Fucking grab a cop's gun, and is it Jake's gun that you grab and you shoot?
Grab one of the cops. With us and
fuck, and you don't even see it coming. It's just like fuck.
So I was in Stone Mountain, Georgia, by myself most of the time while I was there, just getting ready for this and watching, you know, videos of like people who'd committed suicide. Watching videos of like child abduction and what was so wonderful and Denis apparently had fought pretty hard because like I said on the script. The character was described quite differently than I look and then how we ended up presenting
Bob. I can't imagine anyone else doing that part.
Thank you. It was so insane. And I've never played a role from, you know, people I've played a lot of really incredibly wonderful characters that might be described as
fucked up.
I think maybe you have to. I guess that's probably a cliche for actors to say this, but like you look at it from their point of view or like you feel empathy for the people that you portray. And I feel like with Bob, he's one of the most sympathetic people I ever portrayed because even though he's sneaking around in people's houses and breaking in and taking children's clothes, like children's underpants, it's like
– And buying children's clothes.
But in the end, you realize he's – in my mind, I was trying to recreate the occurrences that had happened 20 years ago so that I could then – find the clues to find my way out of the maze so I could help these because I had seen on the news that these kids had been kidnapped. And I was actually in my own completely twisted way trying to help the case. And I remember the first thing that I shot was just me creeping through a house. But Roger Deakins was the cinematographer who's one of the all-time greatest cinematographers. Yeah. And Denis there and we're just...
Has he worked with De Niro in all his movies?
Yeah, he shot Sicario. We just did Blade Runner together.
Fuck, Sicario is so good.
Those aerial shots.
Oh, my God.
I know.
And the score.
Yeah, it's insane. He's so good.
I can't wait for Blade Runner.
So we get to work, and then, you know, you're sitting around for a week. You know what it's like?
How long are you in Georgia for?
I was there for 3 weeks, but worked like 3 or 4 days during that time. Right. Then they sent me home, and then they brought me back for one more week where I worked, one day. And the day that I worked was my big finale. But during those first 2 weeks there, the few days I worked, one, I'm creeping through this house. And I remember Denny and Roger being like, oh, yes, that's
twirling their mustaches.
Yeah, they were like, this is fun. And it was so creepy because the house was pretty empty. The crew had kind of cleared out and lit it the way they wanted. And then I just creeping through the house.
Yeah,
I remember that. We did the vigil scene where you just see me for a second, but then I take off and Jake's character chases me through these neighborhoods, and yeah. I did all that running, and you know it was fun, and then
stunts at a stunt guy.
So there's this stunt guy, and this has happened to me on numerous occasions where the stunt guy when you watch the film, remember my character jumps out of a treehouse and lands on Jake, and they wrestle over the gun, and then my character gets away and takes off, and so the stunt guy was rigged to a safety line in the tree, and Jake's coming through with the gun, the dog's barking, and I was like, I want to do it. I want to jump out of the tree. And they're like, no, absolutely no way. So the stunt guy, who is awesome, he jumps out of the tree, and they do that. But then with the fighting interaction, Denny wanted to get closer, tighter with the camera and like see the actual faces, you know, if they could. And,
sure,
and I could tell
helps.
They were trying to manipulate the camera in a way that would work better. And Eric Maynard, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, by the way, Maynard, anyway, did my stunt work for me on that film, and he was so awesome. But hey, Eric, shout out. I hope you were listening to this. So he's doing the jump. They're doing the fight. It's going well. And I'm like, I could do one.
Is this all night, by the way?
This is overnight. Like, yeah. All night. And I'm like, I can try it. Can I try it? So then he's like, yeah. Let's get David in there and try it. But after the jump. So it's like the jump happens. He lands on top of him. And then they're going to just put me in, wrestle with Jake, and then me get up and take off. Now, I've been getting in shape for animals, mind you, trying to lose weight.
So I have an idea of where this is going. One of two ways this is going to go.
Oh, my God. So you do like a kind of a fake fall as you fall into it. Like
yes,
as,
yeah. And you're already crouched and ready to hit the ground.
So
yeah.
We get on the ground. Jake is such – have you ever worked with him?
No.
Oh, my God. One of the most intense in the moment.
It seems like it, yeah.
Yeah. He's not – there's no pulling any
he's gonna
punches
wrestle
whatsoever.
You real,
we're
going
to go for this. And he – so he's ready. I'm ready. We're pumped up. I'm like and then after I jump off of him, I have to run – an entire yard, hop a fence, and then keep running. And I'm like, I've been putting myself in shape. I've been working with my buddy Andy McKenzie, who was getting me trained for animals to be in shape and look like a junkie. So for prisoners, I was in shape. I just didn't look like a junkie.
Yeah.
So we're wrestling on the ground, and Jake lets out this, like this noise. And my knee, I thought, just got him right in the groin. I was convinced. I was like, I've just racked one of Hollywood's biggest
A-lister.
Movie stars who's going to hate me now. And that's all that's going through my mind.
Yeah.
But no one's yelling cut. And Jake's still doing this. He's still going for it. We're wrestling. We're fighting. And I'm like, but he seems in real pain, like real, real pain. And I jump off of him and I'm running. I'm as fast as my little legs can carry me. I'm just like, oh my God. And all I keep thinking about is I've racked Jake Gyllenhaal. Smack right into a tree. I run as fast as I can run, and I bounce off of it, and I keep going. I smack a tree, and I keep going. And in my mind, I hit it so hard that it felt like I knocked me down. But when you watch the film—
They use that take?
I believe that the take. You see me like bounce a little bit off this tree, but it really hurt. And then I hopped the fence, and I took off. And then they yell, cut, finally. And I'm just like afraid to peek over the fence, you know, and I see Jake's like, you know, going to give me a hand to get me back over the thing. And he's smiling, you know, he looks happy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, are you okay? And he's like, what do you mean? He's like, that was awesome. And I'm like, I didn't hurt you. He's like, no. He's like, I was just.
I'm acting.
He was acting. And I was sure I'd like.
I thought this was going in the direction of you, you know, since it was close proximity fighting, you punched him in the face or he punched you in the face?
No, so then
how many takes?
We only did that. After that one, we did it like just a few more times, and it looks really cool.
How is Denny as far as coverage? Is he move
gets what
quickly?
He wants. He doesn't move quickly. He gets what he wants. But I feel like he and I have a really nice shorthand together. Like, yeah. I think we communicate well, and yeah. So it felt like generally what's taking a longer time with the setup is he and Roger work so closely together on set that they get the shot exactly the way they want it. So that usually takes a while, but no, the perfect amount. I just feel like it's never overindulgent. It's always exactly what needs to be, and he gets you there, but he doesn't – I feel really safe with him, and it was a hard to get serious for a moment like that. There is like stuff personally that like was difficult for me in going into that place for that character, just from my own life experience and certain things that like, you know, that I carry with me. And I just felt like I couldn't have been in more able or safe hands when we were shooting that stuff together. But speaking of safety and stunts, another little story. If you recall in the film, so then Jake finds out that I've been buying clothes.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I don't know why that's weird. I do that in my own spare time.
Well, you have a child.
Oh, too. Yeah. Right. I do go buy children's clothes for my kid. Yeah. A person at Target made that joke recently.
For real?
Yeah, it was awesome. Yeah.
They're like, who are these clothes for?
I got like him some little Chucks or something. My son picked out a Supergirl shirt when we were at Target. I was like, you want a Supergirl shirt? Great. I love that you love Supergirl. He like loves Supergirl now.
That's awesome.
So I was checking out, and the woman at Target was like, buying children's clothes, are we? Like, absolutely, knowingly. And I laughed, and she was like, yeah, it was pretty creepy.
And then Jake Gyllenhaal came
in. Punches me in the face. Don't kick me in the butt.
How is Jake as a person to work with?
He's really cool, man. He's very focused, and he
– So he's probably not – chatty.
He's not chatty. Not at all. No, it's not like we weren't like grab ass and like playing silly games.
What about Hugh Jackman?
Oh, man, I love that guy. I only got to be around him a couple of times. When I first got there, they did like a makeup test because my face gets bashed pretty bad.
Yeah.
So I went into the hair and makeup trailer and Hugh was at one end getting, he had already started shooting and he hopped out of his chair and he came over and like gave me a big, handshake and welcome me to the film.
Wow.
And the way I describe him, he had this vibe on set because he's playing such a tough character. I mean, that's such a difficult role.
Oh, my God, yeah.
A guy whose kids have been taken. But he was like your uncle that you love. Like this guy that you just – everybody like lit up the set whenever he was around.
That's great.
He was kind to everybody. And I learned a lot watching him. Every actor's process is different, and I think whatever it takes for you to do the work that you do is I respect that. But there are certain people when I watch work that I think that's the kind of person I want to be. Ledger was one. I watched that guy work, and he could just find a way to mechanically use skills to turn on what he needed to do. And then when he was on set, contrary to what people believe, he wasn't walking around in the role of the Joker being some brooding actor, which is fine. If that's what you do, that's your way. But coming from a theater background and having to recreate performance over and over again and having to technically adjust the way my face looks at something with the light or the way my hand moves because of a camera angle, I have a lot of – and it's hard for me to do that. That's not something that comes easily to me. And I watched Hugh Jackman one night, late at night, and the producers from Alcon had invited me to set to watch just while they were shooting. And he's in this wooded area behind his house with his son, Dylan Minnette, who's also great in the film. And he's running, looking for his kid with the flashlight.
Yeah.
And the precision of the architecture of the scene and the way the camera was moving and the choreography was such that he had to definitely like turn at a certain point and climb up a hill at a certain point, kind of come around a tree at a certain point while tears in his eyes, like, screaming his child's name and doing his thing. So he's at his mark to start, and they yell action, and he does it. And it was so powerful. It didn't sound like somebody acting. It sounded like somebody had really lost. You're like nervous,
like,
you know?
You just happened to turn the cameras on when a guy who'd lost his kid is running by.
Yeah. So you're feeling it. They yell cut. He gets to the end of his thing. And then he slowly, he walks back to his thing as the director came and maybe gave him a little, hey, on this point when you get by this tree, could you try and shine the light up there? Because that'll look really cool. Those kind of adjustments. You see him taking it all in.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, like some PA is like excitedly Thank like kind of standing there and he's like so nice to everybody, like shaking That's everybody's amazing. Hands. And then he gets to his one and he just waits and he does, you know, he's not like checking his Twitter
or
something.
He's not like pacing around like a lion.
He's not roar. I don't know. I would love to work with him in a larger capacity someday. And I learned a lot from those actors, being around Gyllenhaal, being around Jackman, getting to see Terrence Howard and Viola Davis work, even from my little tiny corner of that film.
Everyone is so desperate and sad in that fucking movie.
It's great being on this podcast because I was doing a lot of like being there where I was just off to the side or like watching Terrence Howard walk up and have to see the candles burning at his child's vigil. And he had no dialogue in this one night and his what he was doing.
Just welling up.
And I got to sit in the tent with like Viola Davis all night. Well, you know, we didn't even have any work together, but I got to be there and talk to her.
That's great to hear about Hugh Jackman because it seems like if he was the type of method actor who internalized all that fucking pain, that would fucking wreck you out over the series of, you know, a couple months.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're like, I don't see how someone like Daniel Day-Lewis does because he just becomes that character for the entire – like I heard when he was playing Lincoln, even before they started shooting, he was calling the actor who was playing his like assistant or something and making him run errands for him. You know, like, what the fuck, dude? Come on.
You can do that if you're Daniel Day-Lewis. Can you imagine if you and I got cast in something the other night? It's
like – AG, can you go get my laundry?
Like, no.
No. But,
AG, you're playing my assistant.
I'm not on the clock right now. I'm not making money.
My thing is, whatever it takes, like I said, to get there, I've gotten an opportunity to work around just some insanely amazing and accomplished actors in my career so far. And I think it's a whole nother level of the work when you can take into account and recognize how much work everyone else is doing on set. And you know the fact that like for those guys to most efficiently clock the lighting, get the sound right, get everything else done on their end so that you get the best film possible or best TV show possible generally means in between takes just you shutting the fuck up and just being as still as you can. And that technique is hard.
Yeah.
It's not an easy thing to do. And I aspire to that. It doesn't always – sometimes I am that pacing, sweating, talking under my breath guy because I'm – but generally that's some of my own insecurities trying to like get into the character when the character's right there. He or she is always like right under the surface if we can allow it to come out. There's this scene really quickly. It's a funny story where – so Donald Moat, Amber Crow did my makeup on that film. They're amazing and I'm at my home where, if you remember, when he comes to my house, I've got snakes in these boxes. I've got a pig's head with a wig on in my sink.
So
the wall of my home, the art director, who is insanely talented, they had designed these little mazes written in pencil like all over the walls.
Yeah.
So here we are again. They've got this stunt guy. You know, I'm going to open the door and he's going to go, "You buying children's clothes lately?" No.
Such a fucking tense scene.
Must have been in a hurry or something like that.
Yeah,
and he's like, he kicks the door open because I try and slam the door in his face. So they wanted to get in here and get a good shot, see our reactions to each other, obviously. And then Jake kicks the door open, grabs me, slams me against the wall and puts me down on the ground.
Yeah,
Jake's done tons of stunt stuff. I've done some in theater. You know, I did like my rapier dagger.
Stage combat,
which is not film combat.
No.
So here's my awesome stunt guy again. They're going to do the push through and they got a shot of that. It looked great. But then we wanted to try and do the whole thing through because, again, the camera's in a way that you can really see my face.
Mm-hmm.
And as that girl in Bogota proved, this is specific. This whole little visage here, it's a creepy little specific face that my parents gave me. So I'm so nervous, Steve. I'm so nervous.
Yeah.
Roger Deakins behind a camera. Denis, who's now become, in just the short amount of time I'd worked with him, become like an idol to me. I love this guy. He's right over here. Jake Gyllenhaal is about to like open this, you know, knock on this door. And I'm like, oh my God, here we go. So he knocks on the door. About to pee my pants, and then we're doing our dialogue. It's going in a really weird way where Jake was throwing me off in a great way.
Like, yeah.
It was not what I was expecting. He was taking interesting, weird pauses. He laughed at one point that I wasn't seeing coming at all. And like,
yeah.
So I didn't know what was going to happen next. And then I go to slam the door. He grabs me, slams me against the wall. And we'd kind of gone through the motions on it, you know, and he was really like, hey, I want to make sure you're safe with this. We're careful. And but I just threw myself into that mother flower, man. I like went for it. And I threw myself in a way because I was trying to control it. Jake's yeah. got it. I slammed against the wall. He throws me down on the ground, hands behind my back. And they yell, cut. And Denis claps. And he's like, that's it. That's it. We have to move on. And I was like, wait, we have to move on. He's like, we're going to do it again. Well, they did get it per se, but there was no choice because when I went into the wall.
You broke the wall.
There's a huge hole
yeah,
that my face
right.
had planted. And so we moved on. And when you watch the film, that take is what like really was yeah. it. That was our winner. And when I got to hair and makeup that night after, you know, they're taking all this fake blood and stuff off my face and they're like, oh, honey, you're having a reaction to the makeup. And I was like,
no,
oh,
that's a bruise.
That's my bruise face.
That's real life.
Yeah.
Well, you obviously impressed him enough for him to bring you back for
Blade Runner.
I'm glad I can say that out loud and it's not still a secret. I remember, do you remember this? It was almost a year ago, April Fool's Day, I posted a fake link to Deadline.com saying that I had been cast in Blade Runner.
I do remember
this this is months before you had gotten the job. There was a story on Deadline.com that Robin Wright had been cast in Blade Runner. And so I just did a screen capture and then I photoshopped a picture of me over Robin Wright's photo and then just changed the text to say Steve Agee cast. And this was on April Fool's Day.
Yeah.
And I would say 95% of the people
totally
on Facebook were like, dude, what the fuck? Congratulations. And I just had to let it ride for the whole day.
That's awesome.
But then, because I remember, you know, once I found that movie was coming out and that he was directing it, I was like, I would fucking kill to be part of this.
Dude, I got to spend a little bit of time in Budapest with Denis and this insanely amazing cast with this, and, you know, like I said, Roger's shooting it again. His whole team is there.
Yeah.
Being
it's like a family reunion for you, right? As far as the crew?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Don Sparks, who's our AD and his whole team, they're all back there and they've been through the shit with me, you know, before. That was such a hard role with Bob. And so then to get to come play with these guys.
And you obviously didn't audition for this.
I did not. I'm very blessed that Denny, you know, he saw something in this role that, well, yeah. Gosh, should I be offended? No, I'm not.
No,
kidding.
Absolutely.
I'm so honored that when he saw, he had this role that he saw something. But I will say that it was something I'd hoped, prayed, and thought about for a year since they announced that he was going to make the film.
Yeah.
And because he's a friend of mine, it's an awkward, you know, in this business, yep. It's an awkward feeling. You don't want to reach out. You know, if I knew you're making a show tomorrow, like yep. we've talked a lot about how we got to find something to collaborate on, but yeah. It would be very odd for me to like want to like call you and be like, hey, man,
you know,
so
the best
new
way I found
off you're doing
the
is,
best way I found to do that is to do it jokingly. Go, hey, just so you know, I'm free. You know, just put it in their head, like, oh yeah, I should fucking hire
AG,
Dave.
Yeah.
So, we won't talk about the actual work on that movie.
No. But just to say that I can't wait for people to see what he did there. And
dude, the teaser for that. Anyone listening who hasn't seen it, you can go on IMDb or just, you know, YouTube and Google search Blade Runner 2049 trailer. It's fucking amazing.
It's
in
amazing hands with Denis, with Alcon, with the writer. I mean, and it's I can't wait for people to see because there's some mind blowing stuff. When I first got my pages, that I was like, whoa.
Oh my god, I can't fucking. I'm glad it comes out this year.
I am too.
I'm glad I don't have to like with Guardians. I've been like,
although do you
I've
have
been
this
waiting
experience
for a year.
When I have a small role in something, the reality hangs over my head at all times.
I might not be in this
that
movie.
I may not make it to the film. So until somebody calls me for like ADR or like I get it, the director says like, hey, the film is great. Because yeah. I've had friends that had significant small roles in something. They showed up the night it came out.
Yeah.
and then they were completely cut out of the thing. And it's heartbreaking. I mean,
well, that's the, you know, that's the you know, part of going, you know, being a character actor is, you know, when we were shooting Guardians, as we were doing it, I was like, this is fucking fun, and I'm getting to do so much amazing shit and be funny, and I'm like, oh my God, this is some of my best work, and this is amazing. But at the end of the day, I go back to my house, and I'm like, this is not critical to the story at all. All the funny shit I did, all the great things I said is not critical. It doesn't move the story at all. And when they're in editing and they start getting notes like, this movie is like 20 minutes too long, cut 20 minutes out of it. Like, I'm easily cut down.
It happened with our friends in anything that we've done. I mean, anything you've done, even when Belko comes out, yeah. I know that there was stuff that people were doing yeah. when I was down there that is just gone, you know?
Oh, yeah. And there's shit that was in the script that I remember going, wait, that never happened.
It's gone now. Yeah. And it's a reality. So I've come to a place where the process is, and I know it's again like my 15th actor cliche of this interview, but I swear to God, the process is everything to me, because the final product, I do watch it. I'm not one of those actors, like, I don't watch my stuff. I love to go and, like, when I'm a part of something, it's so fun to go to a theater or turn on the TV. We don't even have a TV right now. Will you help us get a TV? Will you come over this weekend?
Man, I wish you had told me this, like, months ago. I just got rid of them.
Shut up. You put it, like, on the sidewalk?
No.
Somebody's Instagramming.
Something happened. I think there was a tube that died in it, but you could have had it.
I could have tied up some tube up in that thing, man. Now we have a TV like the one we used to have in our old place, but it's in a room.
No, your
like
new place is great. You can't have a tiny TV. TV.
We have a fireplace. We just watch that. So I don't bullshit when I say that, like, the process is it's everything to me. It's everything to me. I love that. I love it.
I can't wait for Guardians to come out, but it coming out is not as fun as being in Georgia and shooting it.
Ant-Man, I mean, I have, again, like
probably let's get into Ant-Man.
10 lines in that film, maybe 15 lines in that film. But in the entirety of the work, there was full days when I got to be in a room with Paul Rudd, Michael Pena, and T.I. And I got to watch, you know, Paul and Michael especially, their rapport is so insane. And I'm just like a fly on the wall, just occasionally trying to throw out Milo. It's not like they didn't toss me the ball because all that stuff was – there was so much improv happening.
You can tell. How is Peyton Reed?
Oh, God, dude. Have you ever worked with him?
No, but I'm familiar with
him. Dude, he's so awesome.
He did a lot of like TV, like Mr. Show. He directed episodes of Mr. Show.
And I love Down with Love. And he's done a ton of stuff. And he's covered like a lot of different genres. And but at the end of the day, he's like – We bonded because we're both geeks who love comic books, and we also are into like weird humor. And I knew I felt like I understood my contribution to the group from the beginning, even when I tested with Paul and Michael way back when Edgar was still directing it. I felt like where I could be useful is like delivering dry text.
Was he written as a Russian character?
He was written as a Russian hacker, and originally there was a lot more guys in the gang.
Yeah.
The gang was like, I want to say it was like six or seven deep. And then when the whole changing of the guards happened, I didn't know if I was still going to get to be part of the film. In fact, this is a really funny story. So it was the summer Arlo was born. Yeah. And I'd signed my agreement for my test agreement. And then I got the part.
Yeah.
And then Edgar left, and then I didn't know who was going to direct it, and I didn't know if I'd be a part of it. And then Peyton got on board. I was reading about all this, but I wasn't hearing anything, so I didn't know if I was still in the movie.
Yeah.
So it was stressful because it's like I've got this new baby at home.
Of course.
I just made Animals, which had premiered at South By, but, you know, that wasn't bringing in anything.
No.
And
so by the way, if you would have been written out, would you still have had to have gotten paid?
Yes. Yeah. I would have still gotten paid even if I gotten written out, because at that point they'd activated the contract.
Yeah.
But then my manager called me, and I'd been like really hounding them, like, can you please find out what the F is going on?
Yeah.
And he's like, hey, good news. You're going to go down and do some tests with Peyton in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Exciting. You know, time to go be with the gang. And I'm like, okay. And I got off the phone and I went and packed my bags and I said to Eve, like, can you effing believe this? Like, I have to go test again now with the new director in Atlanta. I fly down to Atlanta. I'm so nervous now because now it's just like.
But was this just a camera test or an actual like chemistry test type?
I didn't know the difference. When someone said to me, you're going to test in Atlanta, I get down there.
The same exact thing.
Dude, I get down there and like. I get taken to this hair and makeup trailer. They put me in the look
They're
of everything.
They're just testing you for wardrobe and makeup.
Office and me, Michael Pena, Paul Rudd, Evangeline Lilly, Michael Douglas. T.I. wasn't there, I don't think, that day. But everybody else, we're like in this like boardroom. And the executives were there that day. Mm-hmm. And Peyton. And they do like this demo for us. They show us all these cool effects they've been working on. And I was just sitting there thinking like – boy, if I don't get this now, this really sucks. Why are they dangling all this in front of me? And then Peyton, like, comes over because we hadn't officially talked yet at all. And he gives me, like, a big hug. And he's like, hey, man, I'm so excited you're here. And I loved Prisoners. He'd seen Prisoners at that point. And I was like, thanks, man. He's like – I was like, what's going on? He's like, we're just doing camera tests.
I live the exact same thing.
For Guardians?
Oh, James, you know, after, you know, I couldn't do Belko, James was like, don't worry. He's like, I have a part for you in Guardians. It's going to be really fun. And I was like, and I told him, I go, don't feel like you have to put me in Guardians because I had to back out of Belko. You don't owe me anything.
Right.
I appreciate it, but you don't have to do it.
Boy, that's the opposite of what I was saying I wanted to do earlier.
And that kept going on, you know, for like all of summer and fall of 2015.
Oh, and he'd be like, don't worry, I've got something for you. It's coming.
Yeah. And so, you know, Simon was like, yeah, he's like, you ready to go to Atlanta and shoot? And I'm like, yeah, I haven't really signed anything or anything. And then, you know, my managers and agents got involved in it and everything. And it was like, okay, this is actually happening. And then, you know, we got fitted for wardrobe and everything here in LA. I got to put on a Ravagers uniform and I was like, oh my God, this is fucking amazing. And they had told me to stop shaving. You know, remember for 6 or 7 months, they're like, don't shave, just stop shaving. And so, so it was like December and my agents called and said, they're going to fly you to Atlanta to camera test. And I thought camera test and testing were the same thing. And I was like, oh fuck, now I have to fucking turn it on. And like, I thought I was still auditioning again for the job. And I was like fucking nervous. And I get down there and it's like, everybody's there, Rooker's there, you know, and like all the Ravagers. And I think Kevin Feige was there.
Sure,
and like,
yeah.
And we're at Pinewood, you know, in Atlanta.
That's exactly what happened to me.
And we were on a fucking stage in January, and it is an empty-ass stage except for the camera and a boom.
And like a white backdrop behind you or something.
Yeah. And they're like, okay, here's going to makeup and everything here. And I go and I get my fucking scar put on and, you know, shave my head, and I'm like – so nervous because I think I'm still auditioning. I'm like, oh, I'm testing.
I hear
testing.
Of
and
course.
I'm,
it's exactly and, what happened to me.
I, you know, I go in with all the Ravagers and Chris Sullivan is there and he's Taserface and he looks totally different at this point than he does in the actual movie. You know, he's like purple and looks really cool. And we go in and James is just like, yeah, he's like about Chris. He's like, yeah, it looks different. Change this. And so we're just going back and forth, just changing wardrobe and makeup. And I'm like, I finally asked someone, I'm like, what the fuck is going on? They're like, they're just seeing how you look on camera.
You got it. You've got the role. You're here.
Yes. And I didn't know that. And I was like, once I found that out, I was so relaxed and had like a lot of fun. But for like the first half of the day, I'm like, oh, fuck, man.
I know.
James was so in director mode and focused. You know, he wasn't fucking around. He wasn't joking like he does when we're at his house or something. He was just like, he was like a professional. He is so professional. And you're just like, oh, God, I don't want to fucking let this guy down. And
dude, I can't believe that happened to you, too. That's exactly.
I didn't know a camera test is actually just for how you look on camera.
Yeah.
I thought it was, you know, like a chemistry test to see how you work with the other actors.
Because, oh, man. I was at South by Southwest with animals, and I had to fly back early. Eve was 8 months pregnant with Arlo. I had to leave pregnant Eve with Colin and the rest of my animals friends in Austin to fly back for my chemistry test at Disney with, you know, Rudd and those guys.
Yeah.
And then they canceled it. So then I went to Vancouver and was working on a TV show called The Intruders, and they flew me back a second time to do the camera test with those guys, chemistry test, and a huge room of other actors all going for these roles. And that was with Edgar at that time, so I get to talk to him a little bit. And then
do you know who else was up for that part?
My part I don't know, but I know there was a lot of other actors that, like, I recognized who were in for – because at that point, like I said, there was a bunch of other
– Yeah.
Bunch of other guys. But Paul Rudd is from the same town where I am, a little suburb outside of Kansas City, Kansas. And I knew that. He didn't know me from Adam. And when we were in the, like, waiting room during the test, you know, he's such a nice guy. He came and was like, hey, good luck, everybody. How you doing? We're all drinking coffee and, like, trying to be cool. And everyone – it's a comedy. So all these other guys were comedians. They were all, like, dropping funny stuff left and right. I was dead in the water. Anytime I try to make a joke, it just got quiet. And I was trying to keep up. I'm like, they're only going to like me if I'm funny.
Shit.
And so I did – I come – sometimes when I'm working in character, I do, like – I forgot to stay because for the voice, it's hard for
it's
me
hard
to
slip
go in and
that,
out.
Yeah.
So I was in voice, and Paul, we did a couple of scenes together, and I threw a couple improvs out, and he comes to me, I'm drinking coffee, and he says, man, that was good. That was really funny. And I'm like, thank you. And he's like, how long have you been over here? You know, he's so sweet. And I'm like, I was coming to be for assistant manager at Long John Silver at the Oak Park Mall, which is the mall
in
where
Kansas.
Both he and I worked back in the day. Like,
yeah.
And he was like, what? And I was like, I'm from Kansas, man. And he was like, what?
By the way, I did a refresher last night and I watched the movie again to prepare for this. And I watched with commentary on, and he tells that story.
No way.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I think it's the first scene that you're in when he meets the gang in the Tenderloin in the apartment. And they're like, oh, there's Dave Dastmalchian. And Paul's like, you know, when I met him, I thought he was really Russian.
Are you serious? He tells that story?
Yeah. That's and
so
then
cool.
He's like, and then he starts dropping references to this town that I'm from. And I was like, what the fuck? That's in the commentary.
I have to watch it. I didn't realize that there's a DVD bonus commentary.
Yeah, yeah. It's on iTunes. It's in the iTunes extras.
I'm going right. Like, I'm watching that right when I get home. That's awesome.
And I was like, yeah, I knew that story already. But so let me get the whole – you came on, you auditioned with Edgar.
Yes.
Who was the original Edgar had been pushing for this movie since
for
like
years.
2002 or
yes,
something.
Yes,
like,
yes. For many years.
For like a decade.
And as the comic book geek that I am, I'd been tracking that and every other film's progress, you know, for years. So the chance that I was going to – and I – first comic that I really followed devoutly was the West Coast Avengers when I was a kid. And Hank Pym was a part of that team.
Yeah.
So for the fact that I was a diehard Batman fan and then a diehard, like, Pym fan to be in now an Ant-Man film, dude. And I love Edgar's work, so I was psyched. So, yeah, I auditioned for him.
And then how much did the character change – or did it script-wise between Edgar's script and the new one that Adam and Paul had done revisions on?
The character himself stayed – the same because I luckily Paul had liked what I was doing, you know, tonally with the character, I think.
Yeah.
But what I feel like I got more to do. I mean, even though I'm still like kind of a fly on the wall in a lot of the stuff that I'm in there.
Well,
because
if they cut
there was
the
less
gang
guys,
down,
they
yeah.
cut the gang down, then it was more of like, you know, just the four of us or the three of us and then whenever Paul would come in. So it was in the end, I got the best – like I was very lucky. My whole career has been like one lottery ticket after the next, but that was such a lucky thing.
And so you
thing.
Camera tested with Edgar.
Yes. No, yes. I chemistry tested. Edgar directing the scene. Paul and Michael were already cast, and so is me and then other actors.
But were you in wardrobe?
I brought my own that day. They did not actually put us in wardrobe. For that chemistry test.
Were you involved with the wardrobe at all?
You know what? I was.
Guy's pompadour and your sideburns.
The shirt that I – when I went to the very first audition at Sarah Finn's office before I ever met Edgar, I went to Sarah Finn's office and she and her awesome team there, I showed up in like polyester pants, like a –
shirt unbuttoned to about here, gold chain on, my hair kind of pulled up. She brought me back. I got to read with Edgar at her office. Then I had the chemistry test. And that whole time I had the same outfit. It was like a leather jacket and a shirt. And I just had this like look and stuff. Then when I went to Atlanta, the one thing that changed was he had had a beard. And we shaved the beard. And I said that he is a diehard Elvis fan. I believe that my character was
– probably learned English from watching Elvis movies.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So he came to the States – from his little village outside of Sabir, like a big fan of Elvis Air and Presley. So he comes over and Yvette Stone, who was one of the people on the hair department team, she was kind of in charge of my hair, and she did it every day. And her and Janine Rath, who was also on the hair team, we were playing with it, and Yvette just started to build it up, and we like loved it. And then Peyton saw it and he was like, that's awesome. And I was like, oh man, this is really funny. So when I first met Peyton too, we had this love of film and like 70s film. And I did my like bad Martin Scorsese impression from like a Taxi Driver when he's in the back of the cab. He's you see that apartment up there? That's not my apartment. That's my wife. You see that?
Right,
wife out there?
Right, right.
And anyway, so we would do that joking around together. But You ever in the zone with – you don't do impressions, do you?
Not really.
Do you ever
really
get in the zone though and you just are destroying it?
Yeah.
So I happened to be in this conversation with Peyton and was just crushing my Martin Scorsese impression. I remember thinking at the time like this is never going to happen again. I've killed it.
I don't want this moment to ever end.
Yeah. It was – because I'm not great with impressions. I love dialects but impressions aren't my thing. So I leave – whatever. I get to – we started shooting in San Francisco. We went from the camera tests in Atlanta. We were just testing the looks and stuff to go to San Francisco where Eve and Arlo, baby Arlo, were there with me. It was so awesome. We're shooting the scene in the Tenderloin where I'm walking down the sidewalk and it's my first time meeting Kevin Feige and the rest of the team, the main guys from Marvel. Lou was there and Kevin and Paul Rudd and Peyton – and I come walking up and Peyton's like, David, come here. And they're going to get a final like approval on my look. And everybody's like, this is awesome. And Peyton's like, David.
Do your Martin.
I think maybe it was Lou or one of the producers. He's like, he knows him. He's like friends with Marty Scorsese. He's like, you got to do your Marty Scorsese.
Oh, no. And you couldn't get it back.
I'm like in the middle of like the busiest part of San Francisco. There's like our little barrier, but then there's people everywhere. And here are the most important guys from Marvel Studios sitting there. Yeah. And I'm like, why didn't they ask me about comic book, anything that I'm good at, like talking about? So I'm like, do you see that apartment up there? That's my wife. That's my wife.
I would get so nervous anytime someone from Marvel was around.
Have you ever? I'm sure you've done stand up for a long time. I've only done stand up once and I bombed.
Yeah.
It was that feeling times a million.
Yeah.
It was so awkward. like he built it up. They had been like, we heard you are the man with this, and I just
you can't live up. To
I felt
that.
Like I let Peyton down, so I worked very hard the rest of the film to do a good job with this character for him.
You work on that?
A long time. It was awesome. We were Eve and I and Arlo were there from maybe August until December. Yeah, but we would go, they'd let us come back and forth when I knew we had time off. But I was technically on the film that whole time, and Marvel was really cool. Like there was this really amazing director in Sweden that I got a chance to work with, and they let us go shoot over there when I was free. I mean, they were obviously like, if we need you tomorrow,
you're on
you
a plane
have to be
on
here.
The way back. Yeah,
but it was an amazing experience. Eve and I's wedding had been planned for that fall when, with the earlier schedule, I would have been wrapped.
Yeah,
but because the movie got pushed, my wedding fell in the middle of it, and I had to fly out like on a Friday. Our wedding rehearsal dinner was on a Saturday. Our wedding was on a Sunday here in San Luis Obispo. We
amazing.
All stayed at the Madonna Inn.
Oh,
we
my
flew
God.
Flew back
I love it.
Monday morning. Yeah. I had to fly back to Atlanta Monday morning. And I'll never forget, Eve and Arlo came down and met me. And I, if you've ever been on a film or TV set where on Fridays they do like the $5 Friday buckets.
Put in $5 and then.
The whole cast and crew, everybody puts in $5 and then they draw a name out of a hat. Usually the director pulls the name out of the hat. Mm-hmm. So they did them on Ant-Man and each week the bucket the person would keep because one of the painters on the set who was amazing, he would paint like a really cool thing on like the wow. paint bucket. So one night after shooting, just getting back, I went to my trailer and there's this bucket in my trailer. And it was – but it had on it like a stork and like wedding images, like Ant-Man themed stuff.
Oh, my God.
And it was filled to the top with cash. And apparently Yvette, who'd been doing my hair, and Mike Grillo and the rest of the whole team, but Yvette had been like taking it for weeks around to everybody and they fucking filled it up. So I get back to the hotel where we're staying that night at in the morning. Well, yeah, 4 in the morning, I go – I was like crying. I was so touched.
Of course. That's amazing.
I run into our hotel and Eve, I'm like, babe, you're not going to believe it. I swear to God, Eve will tell you this. She tells the story better than I do. She hates being woken up, hates it. Sleep is like
so
important to her. And she looks at me with her like devil eyes like it's 5 in the morning and she goes – She literally says, Steve, you better pray. You got a bucket of money.
No way.
I swear to God. And I just like run in the other room. I come back with this bucket of cash and I dumped it on the bed. And she like
was That's incredible. Like,
yeah. It was amazing.
This was the first movie. You know this. The listeners don't. This was the first movie to film at the new Pinewood Studios.
This was the very first.
In Atlanta, Georgia.
In Atlanta.
Pinewood, of course, being the mother studio in London. England.
Yeah. Star Wars.
Star Wars film there. A lot of James Bond.
Yep. So the fact that the Chick-fil-A folks invested in a new giant studio in Atlanta and that it was a Pinewood, it was awesome.
It's huge.
And we were so behind on schedule that this is the place that could facilitate what was happening, which was we'd be shooting a sequence and the VFX guys were right off stage.
Yep, same with us.
Processing as we worked so they could come back and be like, hey, let's tinker with this or try this. So that there was it was so efficient. It was so awesome. And the first time seeing those stages, you know, it's like overwhelming. You're like, wow.
It is like a city. They have their own Home Depot on the lot at Pinewood Studios.
And it just keeps going and
for
going.
Set building.
Yeah.
Like, we need wood. Go to Home Depot on the lot.
You know, get in your golf cart.
It's fucking – I remember just driving up to it going, this is – it looks like,
it's insane.
You know, an evil villain's lair. It's just massive.
Dude,
and it's in the middle of nowhere. It's not really in Atlanta.
It's Peachtree City,
Georgia.
Which is way out. Is that where you stayed?
Fayetteville. I lived in Fayetteville, which is right on the border. I was 4 minutes from the set.
Wow. We were there first. We started by staying out of Peachtree, but then we moved into like Midtown because after a while, I was like, I need
better
something
food
else.
There. Yeah.
Better stuff.
Would you get a lot of shit when you would ask to leave for the – because with Guardians – I don't want to keep making this about Guardians, but like I was there for a month and I worked, you know, maybe 3 days a week for the month, you know? So I had a lot of downtime. So every now and then, and we didn't have like an advanced schedule.
Right.
You're just kind of waiting around to find out if you work. And like, you know, I take a lot of photography. I brought my camera and like I'm in Georgia and there's like all these amazing places I wanted to go take photos. So I would always ask, you know, the second AD or the AD, I go, hey, am I shooting tomorrow? And they would always be like so suspicious, like, why? You can't go. And
where are you going?
They always
– Was Lars your first AD?
Yes.
I love that guy.
Lars is the best.
And Katie and
– Katie. Okay,
what an awesome team, man. I love those guys.
Yeah, they would just be like
– where are you going?
Because they don't want you to be missing.
Sure. Well, one of the cool – I love – and I'm sure maybe some actors don't, but everyone – when we were working on Ant-Man loved one of the things about the way at least Ant-Man went, and I don't know if it's the same with Guardians, but so much improv happened on the day too. Things would adjust. Things would change.
Oh, yeah,
discoveries would be made. They'd be like, oh, this was working really well. Like, you know, remember when Michael Peña tells that long story and the button at the end of it, by the way, was – a little improv when I go, old men have safe.
Like, yeah,
I
yeah,
just
yeah,
summed
yeah.
it up for him.
Yeah.
It's improv.
Nice.
You know, I'm just, you know. no, but that whole thing, that was like it's just a thing they were playing with. And we were dying. We were like, this is amazing. So then that turned into another thing, you know, like.
It's
they wanted you around. But they were cool with me because they generally blocked out when it was going to be the three of us. And I'm sure that's because Michael and T.I. probably have more busy schedule requests than me. Maybe. So for me, I would be like, they'd just be like, hey, do you want to go home for a couple weeks? You know, yeah, sure, we go home.
This was also the first time I had, like, with Marvel, worked on something that big budget where it was like they would – take days to shoot a scene.
I love that.
You know, you work on an independent film, it's like we have an hour before we have to move to the next scene. And so it's just like, we got it, let's move. This was like, you know, there was a scene, you know, one of the first scenes I worked on when we got there, we shot it for like 3 days.
Yeah.
Like three fucking days. In fact, like the first day we shot, like they started with coverage of me and Chris Sullivan, who's Taserface, you know, they got our coverage. They did a wide shot, but they got our coverage. And by the time the third day came around, things had changed so much that they're like, we got to shoot you guys again because it's different now.
Yeah.
And it's like, this never would have happened on.
No. You can't. you can't let that happen on something smaller. And that's one of the luxuries of that. And it's awesome being in the hands of those that team. Like, speaking of those ADs and those producers, because they've made so many of these now, they have a cool system down that still allows for discovery. I was impressed, considering how big of like a major studio project something like that is, that it's not all like, it's this way and this shot this way. No, it was a lot of discovery. I love that, and I – like, we shot so much stuff in the apartment just to see what worked. They would throw so much against the wall. Paul and Michael and I, we would all – we did a waffle cooking party scene.
There's a deleted scene in the extras of you guys gambling at a casino.
The gambling casino stuff was so fun. I wish that had made the
cut.
Then
walking and in and you're making it
rain. I did
rain.
Like a Russian bottle dance and like completely ate it. It fell
That's
on
That's all in
ass.
The deleted scenes.
Dude, they were – we were laughing so hard that and Rudd, who normally would be the guy being the goofiest in a scene,
he's the
what was
man,
fun
yeah.
for him, I mean, for me to be like, I'm trying to make Paul Rudd laugh with my stupid dancing right now. Yeah. That's all I wanted, and you know, I was like, if I made Paul Rudd laugh, wow, and he laughed. I don't know if it was a charity laugh, but he laughed. But indies, speaking of indies and how connected, well, Prisoners wasn't an indie, but it was definitely, it would be considered like a small film. Yeah, that was in Atlanta too. And I snuck away when I had days off and went, like, Stone Mountain is where I stayed. An old buddy of mine who I grew up with now is a scientist and researcher up there. He studies arachnology.
Spiders.
Yeah. We went on a spider hunt expedition because he's doing research for a university out there. Karen Gillan, who's a star of Guardians with you.
Yeah, I have a few scenes
just did,
with Karen.
An indie with me where we had to shoot 4 pages a day. Our movie, All Creatures, she shot.
I was there when you guys were shooting.
I was there
too. The same time, yeah.
That's
I was
the
working
theme
on
of this
something.
Podcast. I love it. Steve
I was there too.
I was there too.
Kansas City, Missouri. I was there too.
That was so cool. Steve. For the listeners, Steve was working on an indie that was shooting in Kansas City while I was there making an indie that I had written because I grew up in Kansas City and Karen Gillan stars
Gillan.
In it.
I'm bummed I didn't get
and
to
Karen
see her.
Karen plays
while I was
Nebula
there.
In the Guardians of the Galaxy, but this is all post our friendship, but it was just like how simpatico things can be. And then Sean Gunn, who's a great, I've known Sean for 20 years. We went to the same college in Chicago.
Wow.
I always looked up to Sean and Val and Lee and all those guys. They were like upperclassmen that I thought were so cool. So now that I'm friends with them out here, it's a trip for me. But Sean came to Kansas City for the thing you were working on.
Sean worked on, and I didn't know until I was leaving. They're like, oh, it's a shame you can't be here longer. Sean's coming out tomorrow. I was like, what?
It's weird, man. So yeah, I got to hang out with Sean, and he had done something with, I think, James that John Doe had been in, and John Doe is in my film. And so we all went out for food one night, Karen. And
I fell in love with Kansas City. I really, I didn't think I would, but like architecturally. And I recently, you know, my girlfriend Chelsea turned me onto this book called Orbiting the Giant Hairball, I think it's called. And it's written by a guy who worked for decades at the Hallmark.
Oh, yeah. The Hallmark is there. That's where Hallmark's headquarters are.
They call the building something like the Big Gray.
The Crown Center. Oh, the Big Gray, the big building, like the big Hallmark building
It's just
downtown.
A gigantic building.
Yeah.
But I really like
that. That was awesome because I grew up there and like Hallmark has this free interactive thing for kids called Kaleidoscope. And like I got to take my son there.
Yeah.
Being back in Kansas City was and in fact, I want to make a lot more movies there.
You should. I loved it. Let's make one together.
Let's do it.
Let's make a weird sci-fi movie.
Hey, I don't want to be weird, but would you put me in your film that's in Kansas City?
Yeah.
Hey, I'm available.
Let's do it. All right. I think we've covered everything. I mean, this is great. We didn't do The Dark Knight because it's all you ever talk about, I'm sure.
That's all I ever talk about. But we'll talk again about everything. I've been really blessed and I'm really fortunate and really lucky. I got to be in some amazing, amazing, huge films. And even though I have a small more to come. Little part in them.
Ant-Man 2, anything yet?
I haven't heard
anything. Ant-Man and the Wasp?
I haven't heard anything. I would love to get to be in that film, though. I hope so. Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
I just did some... Been doing some TV stuff. And then All Creatures comes out this year, hopefully at some
Keep
point.
Keep an eye out for Dave's movie All Creatures with Karen Gillan. And also you should rent Animals, anyone listening. It's fucking amazing.
Thanks,
You're a great actor and a good friend, and I appreciate you doing this.
Well, blessings.
And thanks to Matt Gourley for letting us both be on this podcast.
Thanks, Matt.
I hope your wedding goes well. I mean, I'll be the judge because I'll be there. But
he's like a wedding planner. He's like Martin Short and Father of the Bride.
But for his own wedding.
For his own wedding, yeah.
Yeah, and thank you everyone for listening, and have a great day.
Bye.
Bye.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Chris Bannon, and Colin Anderson. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.